You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Calling all video game, toy, and comic vendors. Saturday, May 30th at the Superkick Columbus Indoor Soccer Arena in Lewis Center, Ohio, comes the 2020 Torg Gaming Expo. The Torg Gaming Expo will offer a wide variety of comics, toys, video games, as well as door prizes, art, arcades, special guest panels, and video game tournaments. The Expo will be hosting the Classic Tetris World Championship Midwest Qualifier during this event. Finalists will win a trip to Oregon for the finals and a cash grand prize. For vendors who would like to attend the Expo, don't miss the Early Bird Special, where you get an 8-foot table for $40 until February 1st. Want to be involved with the Expo but don't want a table? Become a sponsor. Multiple spots are available and will be advertised to attendees, but act fast because spots are limited. The 2020 Torg Gaming Expo, presented by the Canned Air Podcast. For more details or to sign up as a vendor or sponsor, go to torgevents.com.
You're listening to the Canned Air Podcast, your sidekick in the quest for knowledge, power, and entertainment. So strap yourselves in and prepare for victory!
And welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And boy, have we got a special freaking show for you today. I am so excited. We welcome a voice actor who not only voices a villain, a bad guy, but I'd say in the world of video games, the villain. Yeah, the bad guy. We welcome voice actor Kenny James, who brings to life Bowser from Mario Brothers. Kenny, thank you so much for being here with us.
Okay.
We're going to have to get some more of those out of you later.
Goosebumps.
How's it going?
Oh, we're elated to have you here.
Yes,
we're
sir.
Thrilled.
Oh,
and especially thrilled you're sitting through the whole episode with us. This is going to be a blast. We're very excited.
Yeah, it's going to get... I'll just keep opening the door to this. I have the little tiny booth, so okay. I have to keep opening the door to let air in.
Don't want you passing out.
Yeah. Don't suffocate yourself on our account, please.
Yeah, I just have a really small whisper room, and it gets hot inside really quick because I don't do the ventilation system part. So
gotcha. All right, well we'll be sure to make good of our time.
Yes.
Then we won't leave you baking in there.
It'll be a podcast that killed Bowser.
Yeah.
First, in our retro roundtable, we're going to be just talking about our favorite or least favorite bad guys from across pop culture, movies, television, video games. I'm excited to do this. We did it a long time ago, but I think our picks are going to be a little bit different now, and I'm really excited to hear some of Kenny's picks. Then after that, we're going to turn our full attention over to Kenny and just talk about his career in voice acting and as Bowser. But before we do that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, want to throw a few bucks our way, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. And for those few bucks, you can get access to our Canned Air Patreon Pod, a show we release once a month. And we got some big changes coming to the Patreon, too. Albums coming, yada, yada. I've been harping on it. Not going to harp on it today. We got Bowser in the house.
Yeah.
So let's put that behind us and just kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Here we go!
All right, gentlemen, our favorite villains from across pop culture. Jack, do you want to kick us off?
I'll start us with a biased one, I think, from the game Borderlands, or at least Borderlands 2. I think he was in 3, but he's in the most recent version of Borderlands, the new one that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
He goes by the name of Handsome Jack.
Oh, Jesus.
He is a...
Is he handsome? Name.
He's got this weird kind of mask on, so I don't know if you ever really see what he looks like, but he is a mother effer.
Handsome Jack, kicking the episode off strong. Yep. I like this. What makes him a favorite?
He's an asshole. He's the biggest asshole. Like, the whole time in the game, you're trying to find him to kill him. And he's over the radio just making shit hard for you. And he's
taunting you?
Big time, yeah. He's just the biggest dick in the world, but you love him for it.
You sound like it really personally affected you. Like, you,
it does.
You're getting a little red in the face.
Honestly, yeah, because the one... I played Borderlands 2, and the character I was had a pet bird that you could throw out, and he would attack and everything, your ultimate move. Well, in the third one... playing it, I was a different character, and we ran into the character that I played from the second one. Handsome Jack had ended up getting that bird, doing some kind of weird testing on him, made him giant and evil, and when we were killing him, or fighting to get this thing off of his head, the bird's head blew off. I was so pissed because I fell in love with that bird, because he was my buddy the whole time. And yeah, ever since then, I really hated Handsome Jack! Yeah, I was so pissed.
Yeah, I don't like trains because of the one that killed my horse in Red Dead 2. So.
Well, that's a whole different... to a train, so, I think, in that.
Yeah, well, it's not a villain, but it is in my mind because that was... That was Horsey Face, and I loved Horsey Face, and Horsey Face got hit by the train. It wasn't good.
So I haven't played Red Dead 2 yet. Do you actually raise your horse, like keep your horse for a while, or are they?
Well, I mean, you don't raise it, but you train it a little
bit.
You
gets more loyalty.
You do put a little time in it, you know, so that you get up to like the level 5, you know, horse whisperer guy or whatever, you know.
Right.
So but anyway,
watching old horse face go, it hurts.
Yeah, you can buy other horses and stuff.
Poor Horsey Face. Yeah,
Horsey Face.
I did. Then I had Spotty Horse. So
Spotty Horse, no.
Spotty Horse, yeah. Spotty Horse. That's a whole sad story. I'm not going into that.
Too soon.
I haven't played that much Borderlands, but I know who you're talking about. I've played Borderlands 2, and a friend of mine is actually in Borderlands. He's one of the baddies, but I forget who because I haven't played it that much.
Because it's not Handsome Jack, though.
No. No, he's some big brutish dude. I forget what he probably
hasn't. Remember names. There's so many people in that game. There's so much content in there that you really just get lost in running around killing people.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty good.
That's what I hear. Yeah. Everyone goes on and on about it. But same with Fallout. I've never tried that either.
Everyone goes on. Yeah. Yeah.
No?
It's more like. Well, I guess kind of GTA. It's just more of a time suck.
I see. I don't need that right now, I guess. All right, Kenny, how about you? A favorite bad guy?
This is going to seem really obvious, but Joker from The Dark Knight.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah.
That portrayal is absolutely the best to me. Not only just really good acting by Heath Ledger, but the way they wrote the character. I mean, he's just absolutely ruthless, but in a very calm way most of the time. It freaks me out. First time I saw the movie, I was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And then I just immediately watched it again right after that. I was like, wow.
Yeah, it definitely resonates.
And I'm awestruck every time I get done when I watch that movie at the end. I'm like,
damn, that was good. And what I love is that they never fill in the blank with that character. Like,
not really. You don't really ever find out. He keeps telling people stories about how he got the scars and all that stuff, but you don't know which one's true or if any of them are, and they probably none of them.
Yeah. It just makes him that much more horrifying. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, he actually is. He's kind of terrifying.
What did you think of Joaquin Phoenix's Joker?
You know, I haven't seen that.
Oh, man. You need to see
it. I know. Now it's winning awards all over the place.
Yeah.
11 Academy Award nominations for that
movie.
Wow.
Really?
Endgame got nothing.
More nominations than any other movie this year, so.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow. It deserves it. It was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, I think it's something that I'll like a lot, but I don't go to the movies. My wife likes to go to the movies. She'll go to the movies at 8:45 in the morning.
You see, that's and how
be
I
the,
am.
Be the, she'll be the only one there, you know.
That's the time you go.
I don't like movie theaters. I don't know what it is.
I can't hardly blame you. I can tell you what it is. One, sticky floors. Two, the smell in the place. Three, the assholes sitting around you.
Well, she goes
behind you.
She goes to this theater where you can, you know, order a pizza and stuff while you're sitting there. You just push a little button and they bring you more popcorn and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just not real keen on the screen. To me, the screen's actually too big. So this is why I have a 75-inch TV. I didn't get a giant TV so I can go, hey, look at this. I got a big TV. I do too.
Yeah,
you know? It's really great for games too. So yeah.
That'd be so cool. I saw on social media a long time ago where. Somebody had hooked an Xbox up to like the display at like a baseball stadium. These guys were playing Halo on
the
screen. It's like, how could you even? I don't think I could keep it together to play on that big a screen that far away. You know?
Yeah, that would be pretty weird.
Disoriented.
It'd be fun though. It'd be fun though.
Cool. I definitely tried. Don't get me wrong.
Sniping from that far away from the screen, farther out into the distance.
It'd be something.
Screens not only didn't used to be that big, but the pixels were like as big around as a golf ball.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like you can get high def video on these gigantic, you know, 100-foot wide screens.
It's crazy.
It is.
Fleetwood Mac, what was that? 2013.
That was a while ago.
It was a while ago, but I was taking pictures of the screen, or the stage, pardon me, and the backdrop was a screen, you know, of definition that Kenny's talking about here, like the most unbelievable high def. And, you know, again, I was like, not nosebleeds, but I was like in the middle ring there taking photos of these little tiny dots on screen. But when I was showing people these pictures, this screen in the background was so crystal clear. They're like, you were that close to them? How'd you get that close? And I'm like, no, it's not them. Look at the little tiny dots in front of them.
That's them. The people.
But it's insane the detail that these screens can have. Yeah.
I did the same thing at Iron Maiden. I was taking pictures of the screens because the stage was, you know, with my phone. I was just like, oh, let me just zoom in on the video screen over here on the side. I'm like, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
You get some good pictures.
Yeah, they're doing the work for you. They're lining it up. You just have to hit the button.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, very good. Randy, what about you, sir?
Yeah, who's next?
Okay, I guess I'll go. Used to watch a lot of cartoons, still do with the kids, but reruns of He-Man and Skeletor.
Oh, wow.
Like, you want to talk something that will trash talk his henchmen. Like, Skeletor is the king.
Not only trash talking, but in that horrible, irritating voice. Yeah.
You royal boo.
I got to be a name dropper again. Alan Oppenheimer is a friend of mine, too. So.
Oh, wow.
He was Skeletor, you know?
Yes.
First time I met him, I was all like, dude, Westworld. And he just went, wasn't that a great movie? I was like, I didn't even think about, you know, Skeletor. I thought Westworld, you know, because I'm old. But, yeah.
That is really cool. And a good pick at that.
There was always tee-hees when I was a kid, and he called people boobs.
Yeah.
You boob. You boob.
Yeah. I'm about to start using that one more often.
It's coming. Well, hashtag bring back boob.
Yeah, there you go.
And there's going to start the movement. All right. My pick would be, has anyone here played Conker's Bad Fur Day?
Absolutely.
Nope.
No.
Okay. This was on Nintendo 64, and it came after Mario 64. Same kind of a concept format, but geared toward adults. There was cartoon nudity, language. It was a lot of fun. But one of the bad guys in this game was something like I've never seen before. Talked about him on the show before. I think Randy already knows who I'm talking about. It was an opera singing piece of shit called The Great and Mighty Pooh. And when you battled him, you had to throw toilet paper down his throat. To choke him, but you could only do this by getting him to sing the next bar of his opera that he was working on and getting him to hit the high notes to open his mouth big. Yes. And then you throw toilet paper down his throat.
Oh, yeah, that's phenomenal.
Have you ever heard of anything remotely close to that anywhere else?
No.
I mean, that's
so Rare put that out, and they were the same ones that did Banjo Kazooie, so it was very Banjo Kazooie style.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I know a little bit of Banjo-Kazooie, but not much.
Now, you guys know me. I'm not one for a fart joke. I don't like them. Mm-hmm. I don't like them. Lowbrow kind of shit. But, man, if that just didn't tickle me. It was so funny to see an opera singing piece of crap.
With corn for teeth.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of regretful I brought it up now. Oh, man. We have another quick go around here. Jack, what you got?
Hans Gruber.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Die Hard?
Yeah.
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 He's pretty awesome.
Then running second behind him would be his brother. I can't remember what his brother's name was, but from the...
Brother Gruber.
Yeah, brother. The stuttering
Low one. Gruber.
Why'd you pick him? What makes him one of your favorites?
Probably because it's Alan Rickman.
Mm.
And he was a good villain, too. He was
yeah
trying to be tough, but he just kept getting old John McClane getting his goat every time.
Mm-hmm. Alan Rickman was good at being intimidating. He just had that look. Snape.
That's that weird vocal tone that he had, too.
That, too, yeah.
Let's hear it, Jack.
I don't know if I can do it right now.
That's
kind of getting there.
That's really pretty good.
It was a two on the spot.
And then what was it, Robin Hood, when he's talking about he wants to cut the heart out with a spoon more.
Because it'll hurt more.
Yeah.
Oh, man, very
you
good.
Twit.
All right, Kenny, how about you? Another bad guy.
Another bad guy. One of those guys. Keep going, and I'll think
swing
of something
back
else.
Around.
Okay.
Because I'm all. It's like there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
it's hard to narrow down.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We'll go past you and come back. Randy, what about you?
So for me, it's an actor, and it's an actor that anytime I ever see him in a villainous role, it always puts a smile on my face, and that's Tim Curry. Whether he is Frankenfooter or he's the Smog Monster from Fern Gully, or just the douchebag hotel guy in Home Alone 2. Like, it's
his smile can be endearing, but if there's something bad behind it, it's horrifying.
Well, yeah, I mean, look how great it was with the giant plastic horns mounted on his head in Legend.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, that was Tim Curry.
Yeah, that's the only reason I watched that movie. Yeah,
pretty much, yep.
They had so much teeth in his mouth that... You know, he was almost unrecognizable.
Yeah.
You know, well, and besides the big horns that in the slow motion shots, you can see them moving. They shouldn't have done super slow-mo with him running because you could see the horns wobbling.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Oh, yeah. Next time that's on and you go, oh, yeah, I'm going to look for the horns because they're wobbling there.
The same kind of stuff happened in the newest Hellboy movie. Like, there was a scene where he got thrown against a tree, and you see the whole tree wobbling. I'm like,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So if you watch really closely in Shaun of the Dead, you know, and you can see the cricket bat that he's hitting zombies with, you can see it bowing.
Oh, seriously?
That's awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a rubber cricket bat.
Yeah, so, I never noticed.
I look for shit like that.
And we're glad
I'm always finding continuity problems in movies, too. It drives my wife bonkers.
Just enjoy it, Kenny.
Yeah. Can't you just watch a movie? No, I can't.
I understand, man. I understand. Because when you see it, you can't unsee it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't unsee it, yeah.
Yeah. It's there forever.
And if you think you saw it, you have to sit there and think, did I just see that? And then you can't let it go after.
What's up with Henry Cavill's jawline? Randy, you're up.
Well, I was just going to finish saying that I was watching Darkwing Duck with my son a few weeks ago, and I had completely forgot that Tim Curry had done one of the voice roles in that. So
who was he in to Darkwing?
He was the bull, Boris Bullvine, I think was the name.
The what?
The bull, like the Godfather bull. Like there was the bad, like mobster bull dude.
I don't know either.
Okay, my bad.
I have no idea. I'm sorry, I forgot Tim Curry was your
yeah,
pick there.
Sorry.
Okay, no, you're good. Okay, my last bad guy here, I guess he isn't even really considered a bad guy, but in the context of the show, I think was considered one of my favorites, Red Foreman from the 70s show.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Like, what an awesome freaking character he was. Yeah. And, you know, talk about somebody who could be downright horrifying. Can you imagine having him as a father?
Oh, God.
I had friends that had dads that always, they were good guys, but being their friend and the impressionable friend on their good sons, I never felt like he liked me for some reason. There was always a look, and then anytime he came around, it was always... I'd straighten the hell up and stuff and stop doing what I was doing just because
you
I
were
wanted
a disappointment to someone else's dad, is what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Just because I was the bad influence on his kids.
Oh, I see.
And I knew I was a bad influence on him.
I see.
But I never got a foot up in your ass comment from him.
You're the bastard that always had firecrackers in his pocket. Okay, very good. Very good. And that brings us back around to Kenny. Have you...
Yeah, you know, I was thinking along the lines of... I kept going, well, no, he's not a villain, but he actually is, but the show portrays him as more of the... You wind up being sympathetic towards him, and that's Tony Soprano.
Oh, yeah.
Which was also another really well-written character and, you know, an excellent portrayal, so... Yeah, I like mob stuff to begin with, but that show just sucked me in and just kept me. So,
man, I like that pick that the way you did that, you know, because you know in the context of that show, he's your main character. He's the person you're rooting for. But yeah, I guess he is a bad guy in that world, you know.
Oh yeah,
Walter White, the same kind of thing. I would think.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's another good example. He's a good guy that's a bad guy. Yeah, he's got good. He's a bad guy with good intentions.
Yeah.
Even though Tony Soprano, not so much on the good intentions, except, you know, taking care of the family, but because everybody else is kind of inconsequential.
Right.
And you can put a bullet in the back of somebody's head and not even, you know, just be all like, oh, okay, time to go to lunch, you know.
Have you heard that's cool. Have you heard they're doing a sequel or a prequel series to that with his son?
Really?
Yeah.
A prequel to The Sopranos?
Yeah, with his son playing a younger version of
Tony. That's right. Oh, that's what it was, yeah.
So Jane Gandolfini's real life son. I see what you're saying.
Yes, sorry.
Wow.
Huh. That'd be interesting. Tony, the younger years.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, there was a name of a gang, and I can't remember from the show that he was in, but it's focused on that.
Do they have a similar resemblance? Do they look like each other?
From pictures I've seen, they have.
Really? That's interesting.
Should be.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything about that. That's cool.
Me neither. Yeah.
I know it was always cool to see Tony Soprano being happy when he'd see the ducks go into the swimming pool.
Those ducks. Just the opening of that show where he starts talking to Melfi and the first thing he starts talking about is a reenactment of him and what's-his-face, his nephew, going, and he sees this guy that owes him money, and they go and hit him with the car and shit. And then he just starts beating the crap out of him. And this was done to some oldies song, you know, and I just sat there going, no wonder people are all gaga about this show. And I wound up going right then and going and buying, like, the first season, you know, on DVDs, and my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we just sat and watched the whole first season with espressos and just not stop.
Wow.
It was fun. It was crazy.
That's how you know you've got a good show.
Yes. Yeah. I was drinking espresso, watching the TV. It was good. It was really good.
I'm kind of jealous, actually. It sounds amazing.
Yeah. I don't binge things much anymore. I did binge some anime recently, but...
You know, I wish I could, but I'm the same way. I really can't binge anything anymore. I mean, I don't have the time, and if I did, I'd feel like I'd get antsy like 3 episodes in. And be like, oh,
that's all I can
up.
Really do. Yeah, anything.
But, yeah, well, you know, at least with anime, you know, they're like 22 to 24 minutes, and part of that's the intro music and the outro music. So,
oh yeah, so that's
you got like a 20-minute episode, and you're just like, "Oh, done? Oh, cool, next."
Yeah, see, Netflix makes it hard to binge, at least for me, just because you know their episodes are an hour long, and that's without commercials. That's man, you feel that hour by the end of it, no matter how into a show you are. Like Stranger Things, love that show, but damn, 50 minutes, I'm like, come on, like wrap this shit up. Very good. I dig that pick again. That was a good pick to end the retro roundtable on. And a good point to turn our attention over to Kenny. Kenny, thanks again for being here and sitting in on the whole episode, man. This is, so far, has been a blast.
Yeah, it's good to be here and alive and in my own house. That's
probably the best part.
Yeah. It's like whenever I don't have to go anywhere, we just moved and I have to use GPS to go to, you know, to the grocery store. I can't remember where it is.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You just moved then. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been here for about 3 months, I guess.
Moving
and it sounds like plenty, but not if you don't go anywhere. I don't have any reason to really go anywhere. You know, I go to the airport. I don't drive to the airport. I just Uber. So, you know, it's like I don't go anywhere.
Makes sense.
I've been living where I live for about 10 years and still need a GPS around town because I don't know where stuff is all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't go. I leave town to go to work and then come back. That's about it. Wow. Grocery store down the road, that's easy, but like...
Yeah.
Certain places, I have no idea how to get there.
I guess I'm the same way to some extent, actually, now that I think about it. I still GPS stuff around here, and I've been here how long? Five years?
Yeah, something like that.
So. Yeah, I get it.
It's just easy now. You know, I mean, you throw the thing on your phone mount, and it's already there. So it's like, well,
if I don't want to go...
Yeah, why should I worry about... taking a wrong turn and then going, dang, now I don't know where I'm at.
Blame somebody else still when it tells you the wrong, damn GPS.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even use a standalone GPS, and I only use my phone. Mm-hmm. So.
That's how I am now. The last time I used a TomTom, it turned me up a one-way street, and I was like, that's it. No more TomTom.
That's why. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. I mean, I had a Garmin for years, and if you don't update them, then roads change, and you didn't. Your fun.
Well, I learned too late. I learned looking at the headlights of oncoming traffic. So.
Turned into a lake or something like that.
But anyway.
Anyway.
Kenny, it's awesome to have you here. And I'd say just start in how you got into voice acting in the first place.
Oh, man, I was working. I was used to work my ass off. I did extruded curb and striping and stuff. And
oh, wow.
I was a curb finisher, and I decided that, you know, I've always wanted to piddle around with voice work, and so I thought, well, if I get, now earlier days of the internet when most people were still on dial-up, cable was starting to kick in pretty good, but so it was around 2000 2001, and I decided I was going to build myself a little website, and I bought myself a domain, and I was like, wow, I own a domain. Woo! Yeah. And I built this little website using a coffee cup or something. I think it was coffee cup. And I took a class over at the University of Washington Experimental Campus. And it was a voiceover class taught by this guy who'd been doing commercials and stuff for a long time. And took that class, and he offered demo production. So I had him do a demo for me. So I had the tools in place, but didn't know how to go about getting a hold of anybody, especially in those earlier days. Usually people had agents. I was just going to the internet is, you know, that's going to help me. And it didn't help that much.
Right.
So I have all these things in place. And then by this time, I'm working for Suburban Propane. And I was a service tech. And I was doing a job at a house with my service manager. And I was talking to him about, I had been doing some things for this guy in Canada for like answering machine things, where he was like paying me like $8, you know, to read a couple of lines as Scooby and Shaggy or whatever, you know?
Sure.
Or he'd throw like, you know, can you do like, kind of like a New York wise guy kind of thing and stuff, you know? I'd be like, yeah, I can do something like that, you know? and it would be stuff like, you know, hey, Scoob, answer the phone, you know? And I'd be like, just this goofy shit. I'm all thinking, all right, I'm a paid voice guy now. Yay.
Yeah, well, why not think that? Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, I was talking about it, And this lady, the customer, she's like, "Do you do voice work?" And I said, "I'm trying to get into it. You know, I'm trying to figure it out." And she goes, "Well, I'm a part-time producer at Bad Animals in Seattle." And I was like, "I know Bad Animals." I did not know at the time that Nintendo of America was recording out of Bad Animals, but I had known the studio because Ann and Nancy Wilson, I think, founded it from Hart. And so anyway, she goes, "Do you have a demo?" And I, luckily I did, because I was able to write down my little web address and give it to her. And she listened to it, and her son listened to it. I think he was 14 or something, 13 or 14. And they were both kind of like, "Hmm." So she sent my name over to the production manager at Bad Animals, and she started sending me auditions. I auditioned for Sly Cooper 3, like 4 different characters. I didn't get any of those. So I thought, well, I'm doing something wrong. But what it is just a numbers game. You got to do a lot of auditions to get a few parts. And then eventually, just down the road, you know, a little while after that, she sent me the audition for Bowser. And I was like, the Bowser, right? You know, okay. And at the time, I knew that they had started using human voices, because I'm old enough that I was in my early to mid-20s when the original NES came out. My first wife got me that for Christmas. And so I had always known just the little electronic noises that they always had for everything, except for Mario, right. You know. So I was like, all right, I'll do this. And they sent me reference tracks, and it was Scott Burns, his work from Super Mario Sunshine. Okay. So they sent me the scripts for that, and they sent me, well, the sides were from Super Mario Sunshine. And the reference tracks were Scott's tracks, outtakes and all, just raw tracks. And I was like, okay, well, they want me to be a Scott Burns sound-alike. So I did the whole, "Mario, how dare you interrupt my family vacation?" The whole thing, exactly like he did. And I sent it off, and I was all like, whatever. And a couple of weeks later, I don't remember how much later it was. It wasn't very long. I got an email that said, "You got the job." And I was like, okay, now what am I going to do? I've pretended like I know what I'm doing, you know, up to this point. I had done a little bit of work for a guy in England that has a does a bunch of audio Doctor Who stuff.
Okay.
And so I had played some characters on his Doctor Who series, his audio series, and a lot of it was over the top. It was very comedic, kind of Doctor Who stuff. And so I was Patty the Pissed Off Dwarf and some other stuff. Yeah, I mean, what it was, Patty the Pissed Off Dwarf was basically just a leprechaun, you know, stereotype, you know. "I'm, you know, Patty, and, you know, I'm pissed off," you know. Only he was really, he was really pissed off in that little side trip. It was fun. Yeah, so I went over, and the first time they called me in was for Super Mario Strikers on the GameCube, soccer game. And so I recorded that one, and they had me come back in. It wasn't too long after that the Wii came out, so they were already working on Mario Kart Wii and Galaxy.
Awesome.
And I think, if I remember correctly, I did Mario Kart Wii and Galaxy in the same session.
Oh wow,
jeez.
So yeah, that one was a bit of exercise for me.
I would say,
but you know, Bowser for me has kind of evolved over time, where I started off being more along what I thought they wanted, which was the Scott Burns kind of sound, and you know, it's morphed into this vocal fold flapping thing that I have going now, where I don't know how I do it. I just know that I do it, and it works. But you know, going, it just comes out. So.
So you're telling me you didn't look to Dennis Hopper for any Bowser inspiration, is what you're telling me.
This is true. That is true. I actually, to tell you the truth, I've never seen that movie.
You're not missing much.
Yeah. Well, I know it's a cult classic now, you know. So
sure,
but. Yeah, and then there's the animated film that's supposed to be in production, but I know nothing about that either. So if I did know something about it, I wouldn't bring it up because I would be under an NDA.
Right.
Yeah. And then that way, if you ask me, I could go, yeah, no, I can't talk about it. But so if I bring it up first, it's because I really don't know anything about what's going on. You know, I tell fans all the time, you get, you know, people at the table at conventions and stuff that are always asking me, what's it like to work at Nintendo? I don't work at Nintendo. I don't work for Nintendo except for when I'm in a recording session. You know, voice actors are always looking for a job. You're always unemployed. So that's how that it all got started. Here I am 15 years later. So it's been 15 years this year, I think. So
that's really cool. I mean, too, and it sounds like, you know, Mario and Bowser, everybody was already on your map. You had owned a Nintendo at one point, so you to some extent had to know the gravity of the character you had just...
Yeah, but I really didn't think... I was like, well, you get paid for recording sessions, you know, you don't get residuals.
Right.
And so I was like, whatever, I'm worked for Suburban Propane for 11 or 12 years after I got Bowser.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there was, you know, I would tell people at home back up, well, in Washington, where I just left, I would tell them, you know, yeah, I'd do the voice of Bowser. And they'd be like, no way. And that'd be about as far as it goes because I'm wearing a Suburban Propane uniform. I did sign a couple of autographs. I was working on somebody's gas fireplace. And I was doing a repair on it, and I was like, oh, you got a Wii? Yeah, I do the voice of Bowser. And the lady's all comes on a hinge. My kids are going to freak out. So I signed, like, the inside of the case, you know, the jewel case. Nice. I was like, oh, here we go. So some of the people have the early autographs that look completely different than they do now. I perfected it, so...
Sitting down filling a notebook with Kenny James.
It really didn't take that long. I was toying around with it, and I had a really stupid version of it, and my convention agent was all like, that autograph is terrible. Yeah, I was all like, all right.
That's honesty now.
So I worked, I did some tweaks, and then it was all like, now I've got people that are like, you know, I had some of my prints come out in Zobe production and Zobe boxes. They do mystery boxes. And there was a gamer mystery box. And my autograph was included in some of them. You might have gotten Charles Martinet. You might have gotten me. Or you might have been one of the lucky few that got one that had both of us that signed something. And,
oh, cool.
You know, or both of us signed the same piece.
I love when and, stuff like that.
Yeah. And so it was really cool. So I was watching, you know, waiting for it to come out. And then I would go searching on YouTube to see about unboxing reviews, you know. And people would hold my autograph up and go, look at that. Didn't he have a beautiful autograph? Look at that. It's beautiful. And I'd be all like, God damn, man, my agent was right. I fixed it, and everybody's all like, look how good looking this autograph is. And I'm like, man, all right.
I tell you, it does stand out. It does definitely stand out, a good autograph. You know what I mean? Like, I've got a bunch on the wall here, and I don't know. Yeah, there's a few that just don't land. Just don't get home, you know?
Yeah, some people, it's just the way they sign their name, and it always has been. And I actually, you know, my regular signature is different than my autograph, so.
As it should be, I think.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Autographs well, you know, be barely legible, but mm-hmm. like, I think that's a K and that's the J.
Oh, no, good. That one, you can actually read my autograph. You can tell what it says. So.
Oh, wow. Nice. Now,
yeah.
I appreciate that. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's very consistent. It looks pretty much identical no matter what size it is or, you know, whether I write it with paint pen or pencil or whatever. They look the same.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's why they moved. The walls at the old house were just covered in Kenny James autographs.
Yeah.
Perfecting the craft.
No, I'll tell you why I moved. I moved for anime. So,
oh, there you go. Yeah, I have that written here that you're a big fan and getting into doing more VO in the anime field, right?
Yeah, moved to the Dallas area. So, Funimation is here. I had friends already from conventions, you know, that I had made friends with these anime actors, and I kept telling them, you know, I was like, I'm gonna move to Flower Mound, and you guys are gonna have to put up with me. And they're like, yeah, you should do it. And you know, a couple of months later, I've sold my house and I'm moving. Yeah, you know? And then I show up. I see them. I've actually already been in at Funimation for a couple of recording sessions, and whenever I go in there, I'll see one of these guys. I'll be all like, "I'm here," you know, and they're just all like, "Oh shit!" I'm like, "Yeah." I go, "I told you I was gonna move," you know.
So are you allowed to talk about what you've been working on at Funimation, or are you under?
No. Well, one show. Two of the dubs have already come out. So I'm in Legend of the Galactic Heroes. It's a small part. The last couple of episodes that he showed up in, and his name is Marinesk. He's a first officer on a merchant vessel. Hopefully, if it goes on to season three, if they keep dubbing, then he should show up some more. I think he has 10 or so appearances or something throughout the series. And then I just did a really small character for another series. The episodes haven't come out yet, so I don't know if they'd want me to say anything about it or not, but it's already it's a newer series. It's on episode, I'd say about 9 or 10 of the first season. And then I just auditioned for a winter season show that hasn't actually there are no dubs out yet on it, so I'm definitely. I mean, they didn't put me on an NDA, but I'm just not going to say anything, so I don't step on anybody's toes.
No, you're sure. Fine,
especially having just moved there.
Right. But yeah, it's working out. I got put on the auditions list over at Okrotron 5000, which is Chris Sabat's studio.
Okay,
and so they do a lot of work for Gearbox and Hi-Rez, and there's other gaming outfits that do some recording through there. So I see auditions all the time, and that's what this booth is for. So I don't have to go somewhere and pay somebody to record me to an audition. I just step into this room and record it myself. I'm pretty good at editing and junk. So
yeah, absolutely.
Audition, send it away and forget about it.
So many VOs work from home anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, look how the technology has made it inexpensive and pretty easy.
Yeah,
so
very easy.
Yeah, I mean, I sure as hell don't have a bazillion dollars worth of gear. I mean, since I haven't had a call to do very much remote work where, say, on either using Skype or Source Connect or anything like that, but. So, you know, I keep an AT2025 mic, and, you know, I have a Rode.
Is it?
Yeah. I forget. I have a Rode NTG1 shotgun that I trade out with it depending on what I'm doing. And I record through an Apollo Twin from Universal Audio, which is a brilliant piece of gear. It's absolutely fanatically cool. That's a good shout out to Universal Audio. Wink, wink. Yeah. That's send me awesome. A new one. Mine's getting old, but it still works great.
Send me a new one, please. I'll keep singing your praises.
Yeah. It's fun, you know?
Yeah.
I'm finally, this is what I tell friends of mine back home, you know, I would tell them, they're like, I had no idea. I started going to conventions, and they were like, what is going on? Because I was doing a lot of live theater, and so all my theater friends are all like, what, who, you're what? No way. And I'm like, yeah. But, you know, I don't know, I forgot where I was going with that, but it was, it's been a bizarre ride. Oh, I would tell them, I'm like, oh, you didn't know about my 20-year overnight success story? You know, because I mean, a lot of people have said that before, you know, where it's like, oh, everybody thinks it's overnight success because I just appeared. And it's like, no, man, I've been suffering for 15 to 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even as Bowser, I've been Bowser for 15 years, and I'm just now to the point where I don't necessarily have to have an outside job. thanks mostly to appearances and other voice work, but, you know, the notoriety of being Nintendo's voice of Bowser, you know? And so now, you know, with I have so much fun doing anime. It really is fun. It doesn't seem like that much of a job, but...
Yeah, if you love what you do, it ceases to be work, right?
Yeah, I really didn't have very much ADR experience, almost zero, you know, but I let them know that going in. I was like, dude, I don't have very much ADR experience, which for anybody who's listening, if they don't know, it's automated dialogue replacement. Wow, I just got distracted by my cat. I look down. I look down, and she's all like, "Can I come in there?" And I'm all like, "What?" So now she's now she's walking around by my feet. All right. Anywho,
there you go.
So ADR, automated dialogue replacement. So you know, it's a tricky kind of little dance you got to do. You got to act. You got to be able to read your script, which is on one monitor, mm-hmm. and watch the video, which is on another monitor. But the beauty thing about it is that you get to do stuff that already has sound effects. It already has background music.
Oh, wow.
It's got, sometimes has the other actors. Sometimes not. Sometimes you're the only one and nobody else has done anything yet. You know, you're talking to nobody. And then there's, you get an opportunity to, they'll run a preview of the scene that you're going to record with the Japanese. And so you go, okay, preview, and you watch it. And you get an idea in your head. You, especially having a musical ability, helps a lot because you'll get the timing down in your head,
sure.
And then they'll go back and you get they'll start rolling it from the pre-roll. You'll get a beep beep beep, and on four, which is imaginary, that's where you start talking. So you're balancing all this stuff, timing the beeps, trying to keep the timing of the speech in your head, you know, trying to watch flaps, you know, it's what's the character doing? Is the character moving? Is he flailing around? Is he sitting down? Did he stand up while he's talking? You know, I mean, so it's a lot of fun. It's a little tedious, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
You'd have to learn a crazy amount of coordination, it sounds like.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, it's just, mentally coordinated stuff.
Right.
Because you're multitasking in your own head instead of using your hands.
That's incredible.
I was wondering how it really worked for doing anime versus mm-hmm. regular.
There's a couple of really good videos. One of them, they're on YouTube, making of, I think it's worded something along those lines, making of Attack on Titan. Or behind the scenes of Attack on Titan, something like that. It's almost an hour long. And so there's some ADR bits and pieces in there. And then there's another one from One Piece, which is another show, mm-hmm. with Brina Palencia. And it's about 20 minutes. And they were recording an episode of One Piece. And so there's a lot of ADR going on in that, to where you go, wow, that's how that works? That's how they do an anime dub, you know? It's like, yeah.
Wow.
That's how it's done.
How much fun, though. How mm-hmm. freaking fun that would be. I'm so jealous.
I mean, I would love to get a, you know, a regular cartoon and, you know, you record the voice yourself, you know, without any reference, and then they animate around it, you know? That would also be fun. I've told people a bazillion times, if I've told them once, you know, when they go, oh, I always wanted to be a voice actor. How do I do that? I've heard the question a million times. And I'm like, I kind of agree with it and was saying it in a different way. But I'm in agreement with Eric Vail, who's another anime guy. He says, if you want to be a voice actor, first be an actor.
Yeah.
And I preach live theater. That's, I think, even if you want to do on-camera work, I will tell people, you need to go to your community theater and start auditioning for stuff and do live theater, because you will learn things about acting that, even if you want to cross over to on-camera, it's obviously, it's a different animal, but acting is acting. And it the same stuff applies right on into voice acting.
Sure.
It's still acting. You might be standing in a little room by yourself looking through the glass at a couple of people, but you still have to act. Otherwise, it doesn't sound genuine. It doesn't sound acted. It sounds like you're reading. You know,
it sounds like you even have your work cut out for you more so than an on-screen actor. You know, you've got so much more to portray using only your voice without, you know, hand gestures and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. It can be really challenging. I'm terrible at self-direction. I admit that. I've done auditions and things from home where I'll listen back to it and go, it's awful.
Right.
You know, what do I need to do to fix it? And the more I try to fix it, the worse it sounds to me. And I wind up using the first or, you know, we use the first or second take because those were the best ones. And, you know, you send it off. Directing yourself can be a challenge for a lot of people.
Yeah, I can imagine. It'd be difficult. So difficult. Yeah. A few questions I forgot to ask you, I guess, pertaining to voiceover in general, but especially with Bowser. You know, as you're with Bowser, you're in that real deep register. And, you know, you talked about doing two game sessions back to back. I'd imagine that has to take a toll on one's throat. What do you do to counter that?
You know, what I do, especially on something like him, is, well, you know, you're going to have a session coming up, and I mean, I drink a lot of water already, but I will drink extra water for a day or two before I have to do it so that I'm just saturated. Mm-hmm. You just hydrate as much as you possibly can. And then sometimes even 2 hour sessions, I'll drink 4 to 6 bottles of water.
Wow.
Yeah. You just keep drinking it down. And then when I'm done with it, I can feel it, obviously. And it's, for me, it's just vocal rest and more water.
There you have
and
it.
My voice has always bounced back. You know, I've worried about it a couple times, but anytime somebody who uses their voice for stuff, I used to do a lot of singing. I was in bands and a lot of musical theater. And I've had laryngitis more than once. And you always think, that's it. I'm done. It's never going to work right again, because that's the way it feels when you have it. You try to talk and it doesn't work. And then when it starts to get better and you go, okay, I sound okay when I'm talking. And as soon as I try to sing, it would sound like hell. And I'd be all like, it's never going to work again. But then it always winds up working again. So
that's, but you've never noticed like any, like, change in your voice at all, like over the years of having done this particular character or anything?
No, I think if anything, it's just age. I mean, I've had auditions for theater where they're running me through scales and I get up to a high C.
Oh, wow.
Not sustained for very long, but you know, I can get up to a high C, and nowadays would be a little more difficult. Because I ain't no spring chicken, but I can still sing. And I have, as you know, you go back to beating my voice up with Bowser. I mean, I've had the session for 3D World. I could taste blood.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, not like real strong. It's just kind of a weird kind of coppery kind of copper oxide kind of flavor.
Sure. The raw taste.
But yeah, but I don't think it was my vocal cords, though. I think it was just my throat, because I'm using my throat in a way that's not normal.
Right.
It's pretty freaking legit, though. It's like when Kiss put their blood in the comic books they did in the 70s. You know, you can hear Bowser and be like, man, someone bled to make that.
Yeah, it was Meowser that was the big killer for me. In 3D World was the Cap Bowser.
Right.
Yeah,
man, I don't know that I ever heard him. So just a cat mixed with the. How did you do that?
Well, they said it was in the script. It said Meowser in quotation marks, and I was like, that's funny. What is it? And they told me about the power up and said, you know, he's going to have kitty ears and tail and all this stuff. And I said, what do you want him to sound like? And they said, we don't know. and I was like, okay. And so immediately I thought, well, Bowser's too big to go meow.
Yeah.
You know, so I decided, let me grab some water. I decided to, you know, that it needed to be more like a wildcat, like meow, kind of a meow kind of a sound, you know?
Yeah.
A bigger cat. But couldn't just sound like a cat. He has to sound like Bowser, that's cat. So he had to roll the Bowser growl on top of that. So it was meow, meow.
Oh,
so
it just sounds like it hurts.
Yeah, it does.
And I think I do that better now than I did then, but you know, probably because I've practiced that a lot more now. Going to conventions, people always want to hear it.
Right. Yeah. So going back a little bit, you know, we were talking, I had said something to you about, you know, your job as a voice actor being maybe even a little more difficult because, you know, you have so much more to portray with just your voice. But I imagine that goes tenfold for Bowser, where, you know, you're not even getting a lot of dialogue. You have all this emotion and things to portray just through your growls and your grunts. Do you ever find... yourself having trouble finding the right noise to portray a certain emotion?
No, not so much. You know, he's got a sound to him, obviously.
Sure.
And the directors are really good at getting what they want out of you. So, like I said, I mentioned it before, there is actually a script. You know, people are like, why would Bowser have a script? And, well, they have to organize it, you know, and so that you don't repeat things and all that stuff. But those guys are really good, though, because they may not... I mean, every once in a while, they'll have something that I can do to a not fully rendered bit of game video. And sometimes they have that, some most of the time not. But mostly they know what's going on things that need some emotional input. They'll be all like, okay, this just happened, and now he's kind of beaten and dejected, and, you know, give us sad Bowser, you know. So I have to just try to give them what they want, you know, and if they don't think it sounds right, they'll be all like, okay, do it again, but better, you know.
Right. Now, a little bit ago, you had read some dialogue in your Scott Burns voice, but you also said, you know, now in your 15th year, you feel like you've really perfected Bowser. Is there any way that we could hear what dialogue from your now 15-year perfected Bowser might sound like?
Only thing, yeah, no, I can't. The Big N doesn't want me doing anything outside the character.
Really?
So the only thing I've said 4 words in English in 15 years, so.
I see. It makes
just
sense.
Mario, Peach, Nintendo, and Showtime. Everything else is in Bowserese. So.
It makes sense, though. Mm-hmm. It makes sense, because if they are going to do it, they want you to hear it there first.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes total sense. And it's funny, because Bowser really isn't the only one when you play those games that, like, I'm playing Luigi's Mansion 3. And notice when that game kicked off, you know, it shows Mario and the whole crew arriving, and you don't even get a lot of dialogue from them anymore. Mm-hmm. Just reactionary noises. Right. And I don't know, maybe that's just so you can inject your own personality there. I don't know why they do that, but... I like it. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it.
Well, and I mean, you know, and you think about it, it's pretty much for the everybody except Mario. And even sometimes Mario doesn't really say that much. But right. I speak Bowserese, you know. Peach, she's kind of, you know.
Yeah.
she's not really saying much either, you know. And that's why they have speech bubbles. You know, I'll have a paragraph in a speech bubble, and, you know, I have to go, oh, okay, well, how long do you want me to do this? You know, and I speak Bowserese, so just make it up as I go.
The last question I was going to have for you here was advice, but you really have already given some stellar advice for anybody wanting to become a voice actor. Just get into acting, it sounds like.
Yeah. I really think that if you have the stomach for, you know, getting in front of people, and truth of the matter is, if you're going to act doing any kind of acting, even voice acting, you're going to have to do stuff in front of people. Sure. You may be in a booth, but through the glass is at least a director and an engineer, sometimes a producer, a director, an engineer. Sometimes it could be a producer, a director, an engineer, and the customer, the end client. Mm-hmm. You never know. I mean, I've had, when I did the session for Odyssey, they had the Japanese from Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
On Skype or whatever platform, and they were watching me record and listening in. So you never know. Once I found that out, I started playing with them. You know, I would, and then I would look down at the thing and go like, huh? You know, so, and they had fun and they thanked me, you know, they were like, you know, that was great. We're through a translator and, the thing is that if you're going to act, unless you're just going to act in your own living room, just to the cat or something, well, even then you've got somebody watching you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, what's the point of acting if you're not? So yeah, theaters is big, but if somebody wants, to start up their own little home studio and try to get out there and maybe even do pay to plays or whatever, then, go to YouTube. It's a huge source of information. There was a guy who taught me a lot without even meaning to. I did do some coaching with him, but on straight work, you know, not character work. He's not really into character work. But his name is Bill DeWeese, and he has huge amount of material on YouTube, and he teaches too. So, and he's no slouch, that's for sure.
I think I know who that. I've seen that name before.
He's out of the Chicago area, and you know, he does what I call straight work. You know, he does medical narration, and he does, you know, Honda commercials for the local dealerships and stuff or whatever. He's the voice of PBS in New Mexico, I think.
Oh wow!
You know, he's got all these gigs. He makes a bunch of money, and he's at home every day. There's lots of work to be done. You know, it's just a matter of whether you've got what somebody wants to hear. Just because you do an audition and you send it and you never hear nothing back from it doesn't mean you sucked.
Right.
It just simply means they didn't hear what they wanted in your audition. You may have thought that, you know, you read the specs for it and you go, okay, they want middle-aged, conversational, and there's always too many adjectives. But they'll, you know, you go, okay, I'm going to do this. And you do a couple of takes and you go, all right, that sounds all right, and you send it off. And they listen to it and they go, oh, no, that's not what we want at all, even though that's pretty much what they asked for. They won't know what they want until they hear it.
Right.
Sure.
So never hurts, you know. It's like I said, it's a numbers game.
Right.
100 auditions might get you one job, maybe. Yeah.
Game of persistence and patience.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
You
good
know,
advice.
And getting demos put together, it's real important, because if you even want to talk to an agency, the first thing they're going to ask you is, do you have demos? So you got to practice a little. You got to get some chops built. And then go to somebody to produce a demo and do your research on that, because there's too many goofballs out there that just want your money and they don't really produce much of a decent product. So
sure.
You just have to look for somebody that's got a reputation.
Good advice, and advice I think I might be taking myself some of these days, because I still would like to get into trying VO myself. Mm-hmm. We've got all the equipment here. Why the hell
yeah,
not?
Yeah, might as well.
Right?
Try it.
Yeah. At least I mean, I recorded 4 audiobooks in a walk-in closet. It can be done, you know? Walk-in closet's really great, especially if there's clothes in it, like there should be, because it's exactly. A closet.
Absorb that sound. Yeah, exactly.
It does. You know, it sounded great. It was quiet enough for ACX, and they have fairly strict standards on their audio. So,
man,
they would kick stuff back because there were a couple of loud clicks or something that set off some algorithm that was listening to it, and be all like, "Nope, you got problems in this. Fix it." I don't particularly care for doing audiobooks anyway. It takes too long.
I feel like the problem with an audiobook would be like, by the time I got to the end of recording it, I would have a totally different tone than I did at the beginning. You know?
Really?
I'd sound very optimistic and very chipper at the beginning, and toward the end, just like
bored. And
the end. Yeah. Let me out.
Yeah. Well, you know, depending on what kind of material it is, it brings acting back into play. I won't be critical about it, but I did a book about food trucks, and if I had read it first, I wouldn't have done it. But it was so hard to record because of the way it was written, and I think it was a language barrier kind of thing.
Oh.
And I got through that, And I was like, oh, good Lord, I never want to ever do this again. But there's no characters involved in that. It was just a straight read. I had to, you know, you got to try to sound friendly and genuinely interested in the food truck industry. And yeah, that's acting. But I've done books where there are a buttload of characters, and you have to differentiate those characters. You don't necessarily have to sound like a 10-year-old girl if there's a 10-year-old girl, but you need to have enough separation so that the listening audience knows that it's a different character, you know. And then if you're consistent, they can recognize the sound of the character's voice before it even goes, you know, Gladys said, you know.
Right.
It was kind of fun, but you got to act for all the characters.
Yeah. And then remember it all too. Mm-hmm. Be consistent with it all.
There's another little tip, you know. If you think you have a problem, either record yourself some references so that you can just access them really quick. You just stick them in a folder. Mm. And then you listen back, you go, oh, this guy came back around. It's been 3 chapters since I did that guy's voice. What did he sound like? And instead of having to go back and try to find it in the part of the book that you already recorded, you just have a reference track of that guy. You just click the folder and you go, here it is. And you listen to it and you go, oh, yeah, the guy sounded like this. Okay, I got it. And you go back and you continue on, you know.
That's a good idea.
Brilliant.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That's why he's reference. The pro.
Yep.
That's why he's Bowser. Oh, man, Kenny, this has been a freaking blast. And I would advise our guests who are listening, if you want to find out more about Kenny, go to KennyJamesVoice.com and on Twitter at Kenny James Voice, as well as Instagram at Kenny James Bowser. Kenny, is there anywhere else people should be directed to check you out?
No, I mean, I've been trying to be more active on Instagram. I mean, I have a Facebook, but I don't really. Mostly Facebook posts for me are when I click the little thing on Instagram that says to also post it to Facebook.
Same here, exact same.
I got a friend of mine here in town that his daughter said that Facebook's for old people. And I was like,
I've heard
what?
I've heard that, yeah.
I'm like, oh, man.
The kids do the Instagrams now.
She's like 13 or something, so she's like, Facebook's for old people.
Oh, wow, man.
So fast, I know. It happens.
And I still think of it as like, oh, these young kids in their Facebook kind of thing, you know?
Hey, I'm telling you, man, they've got the Facebooks and the Instawebs. Instawebs, I've heard of the Instawebs. I know about all that Instawebs. People be posting all kinds of things about stuff.
Man, wow, you can take on 20 to 30 years effortlessly there. That sounded amazing.
Sometimes I feel like that.
Kenny, so much for taking time to talk with us today, man. This has been a blast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, buy some merch, become a patron, see some YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once again, don't forget to find us on Twitter at cannedairpod and on Instagram at canned_air, and patreon.com/canned_air_pod is where you can go to throw $5 a month our way and get access to our Canned Air Patreon pod. It's the only place you can get it, people. Yep. And lots of cool new albums coming out on that front, too. Gentlemen, am I forgetting anything?
What if Krampus was real?
Ah, yes. I keep forgetting our other show, What If. How do I forget that?
I don't know. How do I remember it?
I don't know. But, yeah, me, Jack, and Ryan Little, our other hosts out in California, do a show called What If, where I would like to say every other week, but it's been hard to coordinate recording, yeah. So it's like every 3 to 4 weeks now. But we put out an episode where we talk about 40 minutes on just a twist on reality. What if people could fly? What if a Bigfoot had been found? What if the Earth actually were flat? And we talk for about 40 minutes on the ramifications on the Earth if this actually had happened. Mm-hmm. It's a fun show. I enjoy it. Different vibe than this one here.
Yes,
for sure. Saw that on the interwebs too about the flat earthers.
I'd be afraid to see what you read about it too. But I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
I am Kenny James.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
a dog. Hi, puppy. Nice puppy. Oh, no.
Don't run. It'll only make things worse.
Mutt.
Remember, you never want to approach a stray dog, especially one that's foaming at the mouth. Get away from the animal as quickly as you can and tell a grown-up.
Hey.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
But he's just the, if you'd like to be a guest.
I don't know. I'm flat-footed here.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.